just kept to herself under my thumb. Well, I can still look at someone else. It's down to me. The way she talks when she's spoken to, down to me. The change has come. She's under my thumb. Yeah, mommy, I got you where I want you. Under my thumb.
So we are listener-supported radio, WPKN, in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And we're listening to an album. It's called Stone's World. And we have with us the sax player on that. His name is Tim Rees. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Thank you so much. So you're a busy guy, huh?
Well, yes, luckily I am, and happily so.
Because you were telling me you were just getting off another interview, right?
Yes, I had an interview on the West Coast in California, and it went a little bit longer, but I'm so sorry.
No, I'm so glad you're here, and thank you so much. I wanted to, I typically do this at 2 o'clock every Tuesday, and I usually am featuring artists that are going to be appearing at the Jazz Standard, and then I do a ticket giveaway, so I'll be giving tickets away for your show in August.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and so I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, who you are, because you really span a lot of genres, don't you? You don't really stay only in the jazz world.
No, I mean, I grew up in a house of musicians. My father played music, my mom played, my sisters, and I just was involved with jazz and sort of R&B and Motown, and flamenco I love, Brazilian music, music from Africa. I'm interested in lots of music, and I've been lucky to play with so many great musicians of all those genres over the years, and I just, you know, I'm still learning. You feel like a child in every situation, but it's like usually most great musicians are welcoming into that new world, the track you were just playing, that was with the great Eddie Palmieri.
I know it. Wow, right?
Yeah, I mean, particular, you know, that idea with doing the Stones World, which is to, like, everywhere the Stones toured, I just kind of did different genres, fado and flamenco and salsa with Eddie and with some African musicians, Touareg musicians from Africa. So I just wanted to just do Stones tunes, but in just different genres. And all these are all my inspirations, so I thought I would introduce Stones fans to that as well.
There's no doubt. I'll tell you that among the things I love about jazz is, like the scrambled egg approach that they will take to popular songs. And, you know, this goes all the way back to Broadway shows and has, you know, materialized now in pop music, right? And I would not, if I didn't see the song, I would not have known that that was a Rolling Stones song until well into it. And I think it's just amazing how you transformed it.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I didn't alter the melody at all, but I took it into different chords, different rhythms, you know, like, and I just wanted to, you know, kind of use the material as, of course, everyone knows them as Stone songs, but then, okay, what can I do with it, and how, what would I do on these tunes? So, like, as though I wrote it myself, how would I arrange my own music? And so I just took that approach, and like you said, I mean, Miles Davis or Coltrane, everybody recorded this popular music of the 40s and 50s. And this is, even though this is not what you'd call current, but the Stones are, I think, always going to be current in a sense. I mean, that music is going to be, it's 50 years old, and it's, I think 50 years from now, people are still going to hear the Stones tunes, and it's still going to feel fresh.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I do have a pretty high cornball meter, you know, and there's a lot of this effort of transforming rock music to jazz that is really awful, right?
Yeah.
And so when you find somebody that does it really well, like you did, it's really refreshing. It's a wonderful album. I know it's one that you had out, you know, quite a while ago. You also have a new album out, don't you?
Yes, just being released actually just around the time of the Jazz Standard gig, and then in August called Life Changes. And I recorded it 14 years ago, and it just sort of sat there for a long time based on the fact that my mother died right after that, and issues with the label, and I'm touring with the Rolling Stones, and then because on the CDs with Jack DeJohnette and Bill Frisell, Larry Goldings, and Greg Walmeret and harmonica, it was like, okay, I want to wait until that we can at least get a few gigs together to have a CD release. And because everyone's so busy, I just realized, hey, this may not happen if I don't put this out now, because I'm turning 60 in a couple of weeks. I was like, okay, I better move on and put this out because right. I have a lot of other songs that I've written that I want to record and put out as well.
Yeah, getting into that age range, which I'm not that far away from, you know, I know what you're saying. There are things that become much more important and urgent than they would have been, right? But you've had such a really interesting career, right? I mean, so tell us, like, generally where you have toured and what you have done with. Did you actually say you played with the Rolling Stones, for example? Is that what you said?
Yeah, well, I'm playing with the Rolling Stones now for 20 years. In fact, we just flew last night from Houston to New York, and we play on the 1st and the 5th of August in the Meadowlands here. And then after that, we go to Denver, and yeah, we're on a U.S. tour until the end of August. So this is I did 20 years as the beginning of my 21st year with them. And it's hard to believe two decades with them has passed, and they're still healthy and fresh and sounding great, maybe better than ever.
You know, and so I want to say before I ask this question, I do not want this interview that's about you to be about the Rolling Stones, but you'll excuse me, I'm going to have to ask you, I mean, what is that like?
It's pretty awesome, I must say. It's a great gig. They're really very cool. I mean, Mick just turned 76 a couple of days ago, and in Houston, and he had a bunch of his kids, not all of his children, but most of them were there, and some of his grandkids, and it was like a big event. And as you sort of, because he just had this heart situation happen, and he's healthy and jumping around stage like a 20-year-old again, and it's amazing. So, but I look at his family, and I look, you know, like Charlie's granddaughter, Charlie Watts, and I know Keith's daughters, and it's amazing that I've gotten to see them all grow up in a sense. So I've known them since they were kids, and here they are, adults with their own children. And my oldest daughter is 25, and you know, has been around since she was a little kid. And I have twin daughters my kids have even kind of grown up with this and being on tour and seeing this all happen, and it's pretty phenomenal. And like I say, that it's great being with the Stones. It's the, you know, greatest rock band ever, and they're still playing, they're still touring, and I'm part of this. It's just a huge honor, and I'm just excited to be part of it.
You know, one more question about this and then I'll move on, I promise. But you know, is the aura of them sort of being wild still, is that you know, more hype than true, or are they still kind of wild?
Well, wild in the sense of I think the wild part has been transferred all into the music. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like the other night, Keith on stage, and I even said to him, I said, Keith, you played something the other night. And I actually kind of asked him, musically speaking, what he's thinking. And they're still really young at heart when it comes to the music. And I think that, you know, the days of all the drugs and all that stuff, that's over a long time ago. Thankfully, because they're still here and they're still alive. But so, you know, they were kids. They were 19, 20 years old, you know, doing their thing. It was like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And this is documented. I'm not like spreading any rumors, but those days are kind of gone, and they're, you know, late 70s and still alive and kicking and playing great. And, you know, I think it's more about music and family. And I think that's what I see anyway. I mean, so there's no craziness backstage anymore. It's not like, you know, I wasn't around in the 70s when they were touring, so I don't know. I'm sure it was.
But by the time you joined, actually saying it was calmed down.
Yeah, absolutely. It was more about, you know, like, I hate to say, it, not that it was business as usual, but it was just like, hey, let's play this great music, and, you know, 60,000 people are still going to show up and hear these guys, and I'm part of this. So, like, you know, getting the material together, rehearsals are very together, like, 2 or 3 week period where you rehearse like 80, 90 songs, and they sort of, you know, pull it together in a very short order. And it's a really great business in the sense of like, there's like 60 trucks and, you know, like 200 like riggers and lighting people. And it's like a traveling city.
No, I get it. Yeah. So moving on, because I do want to ask you more about yourself. You know, so Is it the fact that because you were in the Rolling Stones for this long, in a sense, that you know, you've really leaned more in that direction, or have you kind of also tried to develop into you know, the jazz standard kind of sax player? Do those two things conflict for you, or are they you know, healthy and synonymous?
I don't think it conflicts. I mean, I think it's just another side. It's like, you know, one night you have Chinese food, and the next night you have French, and then Mexican. And so, like, it's like having good food. So, like, for me, it's just I like being involved with great musicians. So, luckily, on my recordings, I've been lucky enough to have the greatest musicians in the world play on my tracks. And also, I've been able to play with them as well on their recordings. And so, like in September, I have a release of an HBO documentary coming out with this group called the East Gypsy Band from Budapest, and then actually at the Jazz Standard, we're going to be doing a filming for a new documentary that I'm going to be part of as well, like about jazz. So, and I'm doing a lot of flamenco music in Spain, and I'm playing with a few different dancers and singers and guitarists, and so I'm just involved with a lot of really great projects right now, and it's all really exciting. And there's not one over the other that I feel like that's more important. Like the Stones is important because it's been a mainstay for 20 years, but as has been my jazz growing up with my father since I was a kid. So that's the first love, I guess, in a way. But I hate to say that I'm a jazz musician, because then it kind of pigeonholes you into the one four letter word category. Rather than I'm a musician who just happens to play on this particular night more jazz, or, you know, and most of the musicians that I play with, even who are quote jazz musicians, are also playing a lot of different stuff. And the genres are kind of blending in a way, in a sense that, you know, it's not just jazz, like this group called Snarky Puppy. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're,
of course, yeah,
they went to music school, actually where I went to school in Texas, North Texas. And but they came out and they're combining all this different stuff, and it's fun, and people, you know, which is cool that, you know, like young people are still interested in going and hearing live music and with really highly talented musicians, and they're doing it in a way that's just great for the audience and the music, and keeps the energy going. And,
right.
And I think that's part of it too, is like people come and hear live music, whether it's the Stones or jazz or flamenco or any of this stuff, and I think that they're just amazed live seeing music at such a high level. I think that's what keeps everybody coming back, you know. And the reason I actually did the Stones World thing that you were playing is that I just wanted to have Stones fans, you know, be, you know, kind of come into the world, and a lot of fans would come to my gigs that are Stones fans that would never have gone to a jazz club. And that was the whole idea,
right?
Really, it was like to introduce them to jazz, and so they wouldn't be scared to go to a jazz club. It's like, now they're like, oh, that's jazz, I like it. So that's great, I think.
Yeah, I was talking to Michael Leonhardt about this, who you probably know plays with Steely Dan, as well as leads an orchestra, and was just at the Jazz Standard. And he was talking about bringing a hip-hop artist with onto the stage for one or two of the tunes. I don't remember how many he said. And, you know, he then said, you know, I don't know how the audience is actually going to react to that. And, you know, my reaction to that was, I've sat in that audience many, many times, and I can't imagine people being surprised about that. I mean, if anyone heard, like, Matt Wilson's show at Christmas time, for example, you know, which is pretty, you know, far out, right? So, you know, I think that they that the audiences are wanting that, you know, like Michael Leonhardt was saying, I really want music that's not the same thing over and over again. And I think he's right about that. That's the only way jazz is going to live and breathe.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at the career of, like, Miles Davis, who altered and changed the course of music over his 40 or 50 year period of going from straight ahead jazz to, you know, then it became with his quartet with, you know, with Coltrane, and then with Wayne Shorter and Herbie, and then Tony Williams, who was the real instigator, the youngest guy in the band, who was, I think, 17 or 18 years old when he started with Miles. He was the one who really kind of, like, pushed things on to a really beyond, you know, what was happening before, in the sense of his rhythmic sort of playing the drums, not like people had played it before. But, like, then he did the whole Rocky, introduced rock into jazz. And then, you know, so it didn't have to just be music that, you know, otherwise we'd still be playing Louis Armstrong music, which is great. Louis Armstrong was my first hero as a kid, but it had to move forward. And so, you know, it's one of those things where what is the next thing? And yes, hip hop is what's happening more now in that sense. So why not? I mean, it's hip hop also is coming from the black culture, and that's what jazz was originally. And so that should be part of it. And it's hip hop's artists are very influenced by bebop and jazz, and that's, you know, poetry and rhythm. So, you know, and that's what jazz is just rhythm. And you know, like all, you know, the accents and how the emphasis on different, the way they speak the word. It's very jazz. Like, I mean, hip hop is really, I think, jazz in a sense, because it's very free. I mean, they're there's some brilliant hip hop artists, you know, the way they thread together the language and also the rhythms.
Yeah, so you're at the Jazz Standard, and this is coming up. I have a pair of tickets to give away, as I mentioned. We're talking to Tim Reese, and he has a sextet coming to the Jazz Standard on August 6th. And there's a 7:30 and 9:30 show. I'm so excited about this. I have never seen Ben Maunder play in person, and I would really like to do that. So I'm hoping I can get to see him. Can I ask you, is this your sister that's also with you in this group?
That's my daughter.
Your daughter? My goodness.
Yeah, she plays violin and she sings. So, she's wonderful, wonderfully talented young woman.
Well, that makes it all the more interesting. So I can't wait to see this. Tell me what direction are you headed in for this show?
Well, it's all music from this new recording that's coming out, Life Changes, and it's all the songs were written for people in my life. So it's like one of the songs is actually for my daughter Josiah. When she was at the time, this was 11 years old. She had a snow day, and because she stayed home, we went out and built snowmen and did fun things that you do with kids, and came back inside, and I just wrote a song called Josiah's Snow Day, and then a couple of songs were, I had twin daughters, and they're now 16 years old, but I wrote these little lullabies for them. So there's one for each one of them, and two songs for Jack Desjardins, because it was the recording first time with him. And so every song is related to somebody in my life, and it's just a very sort of a snapshot of that time of my life in a way. And because it was around the time of my mother's passing, it's sort of dedicated to her. So it's a very emotional kind of, I think, disc, and the music itself is not, you know, I would dare to say that it's jazz, but it's not necessarily, it, you know, it's got elements of folk in it, and, you know, the one song is kind of like Irish folk for one of my kids, and then there's very classical elements and jazz, of course, and with Jack Desjardins, and there's a Brazilian percussionist involved, so there's a little Brazilian vibe, and so I think it circles the planet and comes back to the Jazz Standard.
Well, I'm super excited about that, and I want to thank you, Tim Reese, so much for joining us here at WPKN. Tim, I feel like there's more that we have to talk about, so I'm hoping that you'll agree to come back at some point, and I'm really hoping that you'll get some gigs up here in Connecticut, because I know a lot of our listeners would love to hear you, for example, at Side Door Jazz or something like that.
I would love to talk to you anytime, and I'd be happy to come to Connecticut and play up there. It'd be marvelous.
Yeah, I'm going to drop a hint to the Side Door Jazz people about that, because we would love to have you up here. And I know that, in Connecticut, the Side Door Jazz is really the only one of the only jazz clubs. And so it's really important as a cultural piece here in Connecticut. And the Jazz Standard in New York is my favorite jazz club. And I'm so glad that you're going to be there, and I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Oh, well, thank you for your time, and really, I appreciate you having me on the show. And any time, I'm happy to talk, and I'll come up to Connecticut when you say the word, I'm coming up.
All right, I'm glad that I have so much power. so we thank you, and we'll have you back, and thank you, Tim Reese. And we are listener-supported community radio, and we are WPKN. We are in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Lisa Sahulka with you, and we're going to continue now with Chet Baker.
shade on sweet Georgia Brown. To left feet, but also neat, has sweet Georgia Brown. They all sigh and wanna die for sweet Georgia Brown. I'll tell you just why. You know I don't lie, not much. It's been said she knocks them dead when she lands in town. Since she came, why, it's a shame how she cools them down. Fellas, she can't get her, fellas, she ain't met. Georgia claimed her, Georgia named her sweet Georgia Brown.
Found joy. I'm as happy as a baby boy with another brand new choo-choo toy. When I met my sweet Lorraine, she's got a pair of eyes that are brighter than the summer skies. When you see them, you realize why I love my sweet Lorraine. Now when it's raining, I don't miss the sun, because it's in my baby's smile. To think that I'm the lucky one that will lead her down the aisle. Each night I pray that no one will steal her heart away. I can't wait until that lucky day when I marry sweet Lorraine. Lucky day when I marry sweet Lorraine. Thank you so much. Tavon Pinnicott. Thank you.
Thank you. the salt away some sugar for my sugar and me. I'm gonna start today to save those nickels and dimes. Although I know that dreams and thrills and hugs and kisses are free, we'll need a nest egg when we hear those Mendelssohn chimes. Clank, 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 clank. Gonna cut down on the movies, clothes and cabarets too. Cut down on the lunches, I'll bet before I get through I'll have a lot of do-re-mi for two and maybe for three. I'm gonna salt away some sugar for my sugar and me. Some sweet effervescence, for sugar and me. You know I'm a